From the Summerlin Studios in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada, this is the Tailwinds and Sunshine Podcast.
You know, I don't know if that's your intent, and just kind of start the conversation from there, you know, because I've found out that sometimes when you communicate that, the person was not even aware they were doing that, and they'll back off a little bit.
Possible pilot deviation, I have a number for you. Advisor to copy.
Dude, this 777 has been really fun to fly. It's honestly just a bigger Embraer 175.
But the fact that they were sitting on that runway knowing there was a heavy coming their way, unacceptable.
I'm from the central part, so I'm from a town. We have more cows than people where I come from. Very country.
The aches I have, I can go on. Number one, when the jet bridge is pulled back and we're ready to push and you guys don't have your headsets on.
The plan has to be perfect because you can't turn left. You can't turn right. The only way out of that, if the pilot gets into a bad spot or if there's something that's like happened at the airport that shuts down a runway, the only way out is up.
United and Southwest Airlines are in the midst of a full-out jump seat war. A FedEx crew lands a 767 in Turkey without the nose gear, giving advice to an airline pilot in training. And your airline check ride is coming up. How to better prepare and what to expect during your line-oriented evaluation, or LOE. This and more in today's episode. And now, his rants trigger salty boomer captains across the industry. Yours truly, Manny Ramirez. Time to get it on. No option but to get it on. Mandy, get it on. Everyone, welcome back to the show. I am so pumped to talk about the stuff I'm going to talk about today. I am fired up, guys. I am mad. I am losing control of my senses as just how fired up about this episode I am today. I think you're going to get just as fired up as I am. So, but first I want to talk about here. I'm back in Vegas. It's really nice to be home. I've been away for about 2 weeks, 3 weeks or something like that. But I've been away for a while. I've been teaching. I've been flying. I've been seat subbing. I've been doing a lot of stuff here. But I'm really happy to be back. My mom is visiting from Mexico. My aunt. Jan's back from Europe. Jep was back from his vacation. And so it's just nice to have everyone back in here in the house. My mom, you know, it's going to be good eating here in the Ramirez household because it is, my mom just loves to spoil me with food and I missed her cooking. She's been gone for like 6 months. So she kind of spends her time in Mexico and then comes back. So she has just has an amazing life. I'm so envious of her because she gets to travel a lot, and she's actually about to leave on a trip here to Yucatan here in a couple of weeks. So I'm really, really envious of that. But I'm glad to be home, and the weather is just beautiful here right now. I got in last night. It was pretty windy, gusty, and that landing, whoever did that landing yesterday, they really had to work for it. But it was a beautiful landing. But we got to the gate, and I noticed that their spoilers were still deployed. And I wanted to ask the crew what happened, but I don't know if it was a procedure for them to keep the spoilers up. I don't know. But I wanted to ask, but the crew was gone by the time I got off the plane. But this morning when I woke up, beautiful day. All these winds just kind of threw all the smog out of the valley. So you could see from one end of the valley to the other. It's really nice. There's still some snow in Charleston, Mount Charleston. So it's really nice to see that. But beautiful day. Really happy to be back here in Las Vegas for a few days before I head back and go back to work. Going to be teaching once again. So I'm looking forward to that as well. Always looking forward to that to go and teach. I like doing that. I also want to take this opportunity to thank everyone that's sharing the podcast with your friends and family. That really means a lot. I want to give a shout out to my friend V for sharing the podcast. It's tremendous support from her. If you haven't listened to that episode, it's the first part of a three-part series with my friend V that came out on Monday a few days ago. So make sure you check it out. It's a three-part series. Part two is coming out on Monday. I'm getting ready to edit that and get it out and published, but really do appreciate your support. I also want to thank all the listeners, all the followers, all the reviews, all the ratings, because it's really blowing my mind at the growth of this community. I mean, it's completely exceeded my expectations or where I expected this podcast to be within a year. I've been doing this for about a year and a half now. I think I would say I started back in December of 22. So super excited to see the growth, and I'm really thankful for that growth. So thank you so much. It's all you're doing, right? I have no sponsors. I have no marketing team. I have no producer. It's all one man show right here. And it's really your support that keeps me going. It gives me, it's that you're the wind beneath my wings. So I really do appreciate for that support and the kind words I've gotten from that. Also, I want to remind you guys that if you haven't rated the show, whether it's on Spotify or whatever platform you're using, make sure you go in there and leave a review and tap that star. I really do appreciate that. It makes a difference, because I want to continue growing this community, because I want to bring awareness to the aviation community and give back. That's my goal, is to give back. And the more people we have here, the more people we can support. I also want to share your stories. Right. If you have a story, an aviation story, you have a question, please, I want to share that with our community as well. Because if you have a question, more than likely someone else has the same question. So, hey, why not help someone out? Right. Why not help someone in your same situation? And this is what the podcast is all about. Also, I want to remind for those of you that want to come on the show, I know some of you have scheduled some times and they have to reschedule because of potential schedule conflicts with your own personal life. Hey, don't worry about it. We'll make it work. I had to reschedule a couple of them because things came up. I had friends that had to reschedule because things came up on their end. So don't worry, just be patient. We'll make it work. My friend Patrick and my friend Micah, before they came on the show, I mean, we were literally almost a year, or actually 6 months, or with Patrick, it was like almost a year. With my friend Micah, it was over 6 months trying to make it work because I was super busy, and we finally made it work. So don't worry about it. Hey, if you want to be on the show, you want to have a conversation with me, definitely just go into the show notes. There's a link there to see my availability. And if I think we have a few more days in May, and I'll post my availability for June coming up in a couple of weeks. My schedule is posting here in a couple of days, and I should have more availability coming up in June. But anyways, let's be patient with each other and make sure that we can, but we'll make that show happen. Believe me, we will make that show happen. But yeah, I got plenty of content I still have on the shelf that I'm still trying to edit, and really excited for my guests that are coming up here in the next month or so. I think you'll be really, really excited to hear and what I have in store for you guys. Also, I want to thank all of you for sending the emails, suggestions, critiques. I've sent out postcards, trading cards for you guys. I am running critically low on those trading cards. I haven't had a chance to go to any other domicile to see if they have any more of those trading cards, but I'll keep an eye out for those to make sure that if you do want one, you submit a question, you want one, I'll send you one for sure. Absolutely. I'm happy to send them out. Or if you want a postcard, I'm also just collecting those. I've been buying some more postcards because you guys have been wanting some, so I'll go ahead and send them out. But hey, don't just request a postcard. Leave a question. Give me a story, because some of you is like, oh, I want the postcard. I want a trading card. You're just getting freebies off of me. Come on. Give me a question. Give me something. Give me content for the show, all right? So give me a good question. Give me some content, and I'll definitely send you a postcard and or a trading card. I'm not going to send both, okay? Don't be greedy. So I'll send you one or the other. Some of you have asked for two or three. I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to send you one. All right. I got to get these. These are worth gold, man. These are worth gold. And talk about, just got done in Denver. And I want to talk a little bit. I want to rant a little bit about the hotel I was at right now. So I'm not going to name the hotel, but they kept us at this hotel that I don't usually stay at. Usually we stay at this other hotel, which is really nice because we also build points. But this hotel is really weird because the first time I was there, I was there for two nights. This is probably about a month or two ago. And the company kept me at this hotel, and I was there for two nights. And you think that when you have a reservation and you check in, they give you a key, and that key works for the duration of your reservation. But to my surprise, it didn't. So the next time when I came in, I went up to the door to get into the hotel. It didn't work. So I went to the lobby. It says, hey, my key's not working. And at first I thought it was me that I demagnetized the key or something, because I put it close to my phone or whatever. But they're like, oh no, you're going to have to, every day you're going to have to get a new key. I'm like, what? I'm like, why do I have to do that? Like, it seems so weird to do that. It's like, yeah, it's between the company or, you know, whoever books our hotels. And it's like, they're blaming it basically on the company that books our hotels. And so it seemed really weird. And this time I was there, I think I spent 7 days at this hotel. And every day before I went up to the room, I had to go to the lobby and get a new key. And sometimes I had to wait in line for a few minutes to get a new key. Yeah, I know. My prima donna is showing, but you know, it's just those little things, you know. After a long day, you know, I've been working 12, 14-hour days, and the last thing I want to do is wait in line at the lobby to get a new room key, right? So I'm going to submit some comments to or a review for the company that does our booking, so maybe I don't get this hotel again. But here's the thing. That hotel's really nice. I actually liked it's a really nice room, and what I really appreciate, it has a really big sink. It doesn't have a stove, but it does have a big sink that I can wash dishes in. This last time I was in Denver, I brought a bunch of food from home. So I brought it from Colorado Springs. I drove, like, I made a bunch of curry, and I had just food prepared that I brought from home. So it was nice to wash my dishes that I brought and everything like that, and made it really nice. And that sink and that faucet was beautiful. It was really nice. So I really liked that aspect of the room, but I just hated the fact that I had to go down to the lobby and get a new key. I don't know. So I'm kind of torn between staying there again. Because the other hotel we usually stay at, it's that really tiny sink. It's available, but it's a little, and it gets I get water everywhere, and then it's a big mess. But it's those little things, guys, that make me happy. So I don't know. I'm torn. I don't know what to do. I don't know if I want to stay there again. It kind of grew on me. Like it became part of my routine that as soon as I came back from work, I went to the lobby and got a new key and then went up to my room. So I guess I don't mind it too much. Initially, it was a big pain in the ass, but now I'm like, it's not so bad. But still, it's really weird that they do that. And I told other coworkers, and I even told the company, because it was an issue with my reservation, and they're like, oh, really? Wow, that's weird. I've never heard of that before. I'm like, exactly. I've never heard of that before. That's what I do for a living, right? Live in and out of hotels, and this is the first time that a hotel has asked me to get a new key every single day. I don't know if it's a process they need to work with, or maybe management doesn't know how to do it. Who knows? But anyways, enough of that. So today, I want to talk about that incident we had. I think it was today or yesterday. FedEx crew landed in Istanbul, Turkey. They landed at 767 with the nose gear up. So they weren't unable to extend the nose gear. And they landed in Istanbul with just the main landing gear. So they had to nose it in onto the runway. And so kudos to the crew, right? Their professionalism in getting this aircraft down without further damage. And I think this airplane is going to be back in service momentarily. It's not going to be very long. It was definitely a hydraulic system failure. And you can tell it was some type of hydraulic system because obviously the gear, right? Most of the airplanes are hydraulic system. Most bigger airplanes have a hydraulically driven landing gear. But also you can see, if you look at the video, it's all over YouTube. You can see the landing gear doors on the main landing gear. They're down. And also we have, they didn't use reverse thrust because the reverse thrust, for the cowl, they usually are hydraulically operated as well. So that wasn't working. And there's reports also that the crew did a few missed approaches, a low pass to make sure, you know, verify that information, verify that the gear was in fact not extended. And so then they weren't able to extend the nose landing gear and they came in and landed. So good job to the crew to do that. No injuries, and they handled it very well. But if you remember back in October, FedEx also had a no landing gear landing in Memphis. They had a 757 there. They had a situation where the crew could not extend the landing gear, even using alternate methods to get that landing gear extended. So they had to make a landing without basically no landing gear at all. They just bellied it right onto the runway. So good job to that crew as well. So now, I know a lot of you are going to be like, oh, it's a Boeing plane. It's a Boeing plane. But this has happened to, I think more recently too, I think it was an Airbus that landed in LA. There was, I think they had a no-flap landing, I believe it was, but also had a hydraulic failure, a hydraulic system failure, because if you notice the videos, the landing gear doors were also not retracted. I think they had there was another 777 out of Sydney, not Sydney, but I think it was New Zealand. They took off and a hydraulic line just exploded. So you saw this just kind of like a plume of white fluid or smoke coming off the landing gear. So they had an issue with the landing gear as well. So know that there's a lot of backup systems and redundancy in these airplanes to make sure that we get the landing gear extended. It's very rare, but you know, it's unfortunate that it has happened so like recently, right? We had that 777 out of New Zealand, I believe it was. I don't even know. I haven't researched that one too much, but I remember seeing it in the news when all this United stuff was happening, all the other incidents we're having, I think with the tire falling off the 777 in San Francisco, all this stuff. Anyways, it was all over the news, and it's just unfortunate that it happened. It was covered by the media, but know that it's still very safe and that we have alternate procedures to extend the gear. So for us in the 175, we have three ways that we can see. We have three ways to lowering the landing gear. So one is normal, right? So just using the landing gear lever. The second one is using an electrical override switch to pretty much tell the computers, I don't care what you think or what you think the position of the gear is, I want this landing gear down. So it'll override the signal to send that signal straight to the actual landing gear actuators to actually lower the landing gear. If that doesn't work, and let's say we had a system 2 hydraulic failure, we lost pressure, then we have what's called a PTU, a power transfer unit, which will actually act like a supercharger, a turbo, and it'll use some of the fluid from system 1 to power system 2 to assist in the extension or retraction of the landing gear. So that's another method. And the last-ditch effort is we have a lever that almost looks like a parking brake. It's on the FO side. We open that compartment and we extend that lever to release hydraulic pressure from the up locks of the gear. So it's kind of like gravity, right? It just lets it fall. And we hope that with enough force and aerodynamic forces, we can actually lock down the gear and land. But we also have obviously procedures. So, do a flyby, making sure that it's down, etc. And then we can take it from there. All right. So now I have a question from a listener that I want to answer, and I want to kind of get into some check ride advice for you guys. Let me go ahead and find it here really quick. All right. Here's the email. Says, "Hey Manny, I found your podcast from one of my classmates that had you for PT MM maneuvers training at the moment, and it honestly has been a challenge for me. I was a flight instructor for almost 2 years, and while I do consider myself to be a pretty sharp pilot, it's been an uphill struggle trying to understand the operation as a whole. I'm a bit overwhelmed, and I'm beginning to worry I may be falling behind, and that's just adding to the stress. There seems to be so much to cover, and when I study with my sim partner in our study group, I feel like I don't know as much as them, so there's always this frantic need to study more and dig up more information. Can you give me some pointers for maneuvers training in an upcoming loft? I've heard there's been a lot of pilots washing out lately, and that's not helping me reduce my anxiety. I appreciate any words of wisdom." All right. Let's see. Well, let me see. Bob. That's Bob. I don't know if that's your actual name. If it is, I'm sorry. Maybe you want to remain anonymous. Who knows? But thank you for your question. That's really, it aligns with something I wanted to talk about that I've been observing as a seat sub recently. And I want to just say, first of all, if you have this big of a concern, you need to bring it up. You need to bring it up with the department's chief. So if you're in maneuvers, that's going to be the chief for flight training, right? So we're going to have to reach out to that person. First, talk to your instructor and say, hey, ask them, and just voice your concerns of what's going on. And then if you need to take it up further, then, that instructor will talk to the chief and making sure that we support you in any way possible, right? And I want to give you a good example. Something like this happened to me recently. I had a pair of pilots that came through PT, and they were really struggling. Like, I'm talking like this is, they were really far behind. They were just hanging on by the, what do they call it? By the skin of their teeth, or what's the saying? I'm so bad with sayings. But anyways, they were really struggling. They were just hanging on for dear life with just the basics of flows and checklist on the ground, let alone flying. Like, they were just completely lost with the automation management and just managing the aircraft. So I had them for, I believe, 3 days. So I had them for 3 sessions. And the first session that I had them for, I had to do a lot of coaching, a lot of mentoring, and I had to act as the seat sub so I can kind of give them a little bit of overview and my expectations of what we wanted to see. And the second day, it took them close to an hour to push back from the gate. So the expectation for us is that we want to push back under 30 minutes. So we want to have all our tasks complete. We want to have everything set up and be pushed from the gate within 30 minutes. We're talking about, you already got to the airplane, you have to do your security check, you have to check your documents, airworthiness of the aircraft, and then you have to do all your before start tasks. And we the expectations you want to push back within 30 minutes. Most crews do it within 20 minutes. If you go past 30 minutes, it's a little bit, it's okay. We can get it done. But you still remember, you still have to taxi to the runway. You have to take off. You have to go to your destination. And you have to go to the gate, do your sequences, your checklist, and your flows at your destination. So anyways, this crew was way behind. So they took roughly an hour to push back from the gate. So we had no time to do anything else in the air. We had no time to do holds. We had no time to do approaches, missed approaches, none of that, because we were focusing on so much on the basic operation of the airplane, or setting up the airplane for flight. And that was a little concerning to me. So I kind of had a real talk with them, and I sat down with them and said, hey, listen, guys, you guys got to go up and practice in the device. We have some matrix devices upstairs, some computers you can practice building in the MCDU. Is like, but you got to start, you know, you got to start moving fast. And I said, you need to do every single task as fast as humanly possible, time yourself, and then see what mistakes you made along the way. And then one of the students says, well, I'm afraid that if we do that, we may be doing something wrong and not be able to catch our own mistakes. And because we're doing it wrong. So we need, you know, we kind of need some guidance. And I said, well, this is your guidance right here. I'm telling you, you know, this is what the expectations have. We've been pretty clear what we expect, but you know, you just kind of have to wing it. You know, you got to time yourself. You got to really, you know, cause I'm a true believer in, slow is smooth and smooth is fast, but they were at a point where they needed to be fast to be able to meet that timeline so we can focus on other stuff. And they weren't. So I was a little bit concerned for that, and I gave him, like I said, I gave him a real talk, and I kind of gave him like a little wake up call, like, hey, you guys are really behind, right? You know, it's like, I'll be honest with all my students. I'll say, if you're doing great, cool, and if you're doing bad, I'll let you know. But something clicked with them that day, because they went up, and the next morning I had them again, and they both pushed back within 30 minutes. So I was like, dang, guys, whatever you guys did, it worked, right? It worked out. So they were really pumped about that. They were really excited for their progress. But I still did not recommend them for the procedures validation. So I recommended them for an ad session. I said, well, you guys did really good today, but because this is the first time I've seen this performance, you know, I can't in good conscience send you to a validation event, which is an actual FAA requirement. Because if you fail that, that's going to be on your PREA record for your entire career. You're going to have to disclose this failure to other employers or whoever for the rest of your careers. So I told him, I was like, I would rather send you on another ad session, get some practice and get it going. And I kind of gave him the example. I says, hey, both of you were instructors before, right? Would you send a student out that they just literally this lesson, they started showing you consistency with their landings? Would you be comfortable sending them out on their check ride? And they both agreed. I was like, no, I wouldn't. I was like, exactly. So I'd rather give you an ad session, and so you can get more practice, show the other instructor some consistency, and then they can recommend you for the validation. And they had, but another thing, Bob, that I want to tell you is that I told them, I said, hey, listen, because one of the students says, hey, man, it's like, I don't know if it's a good idea for us to go into an ad session tomorrow. And then immediately into the validation, I'm completely overwhelmed. You know, I needed some time to decompress and just kind of like take a breath, man. It's like, I've been going nonstop since day one, since Indoc, and it's just been nonstop training. And it's just, I am completely burnt out. And I said, you need to go talk to the chief about that. You need to go talk to him, voice your concerns. And so we talked to the chief, one of the chiefs there, and we were able to get them a day off so they can kind of decompress a little bit. And they came back 2 days later, they did their ad session, they got recommended. And on the third day, they went to their validation and they passed it. And I made it a point to go back in that day because I was working. I went in and found them in the building and I congratulated them. I said, I told you, I knew you guys could do it. It's just, you need a little bit more time. You need to be more patient. But the big lesson here, Bob, is we need to communicate our needs to our chiefs and our instructors to make sure they can support us. Because if we don't know what's going on in your life, if we don't know you're this stressed out, we can't help you, right? I've seen a lot of people fail validation events because then after they fail, they say, well, you know what? Oh man, you know, it's like, I have a lot on my plate right now. You know, my dad has cancer and, you know, and some major life event. And I'm like, dude, why didn't you tell us this before? We will send you home so you can deal with it, so you can be focused on what you got. Because let me tell you guys, Airline operations training is no joke. It is probably one of the most difficult trainings you're going to go through in your life. Okay. I went through EOD school, Explosive Ordnance Disposal School, for, and I was there in training for over a year. And the training at SkyWest was harder than that. it was insane. There was physical pain manifested in myself because of the stress I was going through. It's no joke, guys. But we're here to support you. If something happens, we will give you the time and we will work with you to make sure that we ensure your success, because we're spending so much money on you. We're spending upwards of $30,000 to get you to the right seat of that plane. Why would we throw that away? So we want to see you succeed, and I really want to see my students succeed. So please, if you're under the stress, first talk to your instructor, and they will give you an honest assessment of your performance. Right? Because we've been doing this for a while. We know what to see in students. We know when they're doing good. We know when we're doing bad. And most students will say, hey, yeah, I'm a little bit overwhelmed. And we'll say, hey, that's okay. That's perfectly fine. And they'll tell you, you're doing great. They'll either tell you, you're doing above average, or below standard. And we'll let you know. But please communicate that with your instructor to make sure that they give you a fair assessment of your performance so you can move forward. Okay. Now I want to give you some tips. And this is what I tell every single student that comes to the training department, and I'm their instructor. This is what I tell them, okay? I tell them that they need to, first of all, I'm going to say it again because it's super important. Ask your instructor for an assessment of your performance, because we will enter notes in the grader so you can see them, but we also enter notes to other instructors to make sure, kind of give them a heads up of your performance. But just if you have a concern, just be like, hey, how am I doing? Am I doing okay? And if they say, hey, we're going to give you an ad session or whatever, take the ad session. Some people are scared of the ad session because I don't know why, they just get more anxious about it. But let me tell you something. If they're offering you that ad session, take it, right? They're paying you to do it. It's additional training. It's in your benefit to take that ad session. So do it. Also, you need to stick to a schedule. You need to stay within the confines of your footprint for that maneuvers training, right? Don't start, my opinion, this is just my opinion, don't start studying for your KV, which is knowledge validation, or your oral, until you pass your maneuvers validation. Do not overload yourself with information before you get to that portion of training, because when you go through LOFT, line-oriented flight training, you're going to go through a lot of topics that you can study when you are in that session, or you're in that footprint. So don't skip ahead too much. Also, I would suggest that if you're overwhelmed, just do self-study on your own. Okay, stick with the material that we're providing you, right? You have your company manuals, you have multiple sources within your EFB to study for your KV and all that stuff. And I always say, hey, go for the CQ study guide, go for the KV study guide, the performance manual, the release explanation guide. Stay within the materials that we provide you, because I know there's a ton of gouges out there, and those gouges can be super overwhelming because they might have more information than you may need. So just steer away from those gouges as much as possible. Try to do some self-studying instead, or just with your sim partner, because once you go with a group, listen, if it is overwhelming you, it doesn't help to overload your senses with more information by going to a study group, right? So just stick with your sim partner. Say, hey, I want to just do a kind of one-on-one, then I'm going to head over back to my hotel room and do some studying. But just limit the amount of information that you're receiving and trust the process, right? We're going to give you everything you need, okay? We want you to succeed. Also, get rest, okay? Learn how to shut down, right? Have some discipline, and also follow a schedule to make sure that you wake up at the same time, you eat at the same time, you study at the same time, you go to work at the same time every single day of training, because when your schedule is predictable, you reduce the amount of stress that you're putting yourself under. So make sure that you do that. Stay within the schedule and study the same times, walk or exercise if you do so. Or if you don't, I highly encourage you to go for a walk or at least go on a treadmill for a half an hour just to kind of blow off some steam. You definitely need that. But learn to shut down. When you need to go to sleep, go to sleep, right? Go on TikTok or Instagram or something, or watch YouTube videos. Just shut your brain down for a little bit. Watch a movie, something. But it's so important to get rest. Right? We need our physiological needs to be fit for duty. We need to have the proper rest. And I've seen students come to work. Dude, they're zombies. and their performance degrades significantly. Like, I've seen students do really well in like one session, and then they come back and they're doing really dumb mistakes. And I asked them, did you get enough sleep last night? It's like, no, I slept like 3 hours. I'm like, I can tell. I can tell when people have not slept, and you probably know it too. So make sure you get enough rest. Also, you probably have heard this a lot and say that during your check ride, they're going to be evaluating human factors. So what does that mean, human factors? I'm going to give you one aspect of what that means, okay? When you take your check ride, it's literally, it should be, okay? It should be the easiest check ride of your life. Like, you know, I thought it was when I went through it. I thought it was the easiest check ride of my life. The CFI being the most difficult. But what they're evaluating is not only your flows and your checklist and your knowledge of the operation, but they're also going to start evaluating how you prioritize tasks. And let me explain how. So recently, I've been seat subbing a lot for, and luckily I've had the privilege of seat subbing for some of my students' check rides. So I was their instructor during PT, and I showed up for their check ride. So it was really cool to see the progression. It was like a proud dad moment in some sense, because, you know, they were kind of lost in the woods. They were kind of lost in the sauce and what we're doing in PT and procedures training. And then they had a week and a half to go and do their maneuvers and loft training. And then now you see the final product at the end. And it was so cool to see their performance. I was really glad to be part of their moment, of the culminating moment of training and you know, in the training department and go on to IOE. So it was really cool to see that and, you know, pass their check ride. So I did it three of them. But the common theme throughout is that we teach, as we're going through the training department, we're really focused on teaching you flows and checklists, and it's very robotic-like, right? So we just follow sequence of events as per a checklist or per the manual, but we don't incorporate the actual operation as a whole. What I mean by that is, I'll give you a perfect example that I've seen the weakness on here. So after we land, we are supposed to, as soon as the aircraft clears the runway, we are supposed to turn up, or the FOs are supposed to turn off the lights, and then the captain, they have to wait for the captain to call for the after landing sequence. That makes them go, so, you know, put the flaps up, you know, turn off the, set the trim back to 4, turn off the APU bleed, set an anti-icing if needed, go to the status page, right? But they're focusing so much on turning off these lights as soon as we're coming off the runway that they are forgetting to call ground. They're forgetting to communicate, right? So remember, aviate, navigate, communicate. So they're so focused on getting a good grade on their flows and their checklist that just everything else goes out the window. And now as I'm landing, or they're landing the airplane and I'm taxiing off the runway, now they have their hands are ready for the lights. But then, you know, I have to stop, you know, at the exit of a high speed and then just block that exit because the FO is waiting for me to call the after landing sequence. Right. So I can't say anything as a seat sub. I can't really kind of guide them there. I brief them a little bit as far as like normal line operations when we're doing it, because we try to make the check ride as real as possible. But it's just I can't really intervene too much. Right. That's just the rules for a seat sub is we can't intervene too much. But that's what I noticed a lot, is that we land and they focus so much on the checklist and the flows that they forget the more important thing of actually communicating with ATC to get us off that runway. So on a normal day when we land tower, we usually say, hey, exit left or right when able, contact ground point 8 or ground point 9, right? So you can call ground before you're even leaving the runway and say, hey, SkyWest 4100, we're clearing runway 27 at Alpha 3, we're going to gate Bravo 34. Okay, so before we even get off that high speed, ground can tell us, hey, taxi Alpha, Charlie to the gate or whatever. So I don't have to stop the airplane blocking that high speed so we can continue moving on, right? So that checklist, it's really not time or safety critical at this point, right? It's all we're doing is putting the flaps back up, we're turning off lights, and we're turning on the APU. It is not essential for us to run that checklist now. So that's how I brief usually when I come landing. I say, hey, once we get off the runway, the first thing is to make sure we're safe. We are both heads up, making sure we're avoiding traffic or any vehicles that we could potentially hit. And then after that, hey, you can turn off the lights and then I'll call for the after landing sequence. So we want to focus on those, the core principles of flying, aviate, navigate, communicate. So prioritize those tasks. And what's more important, a checklist or a flow, or actually flying the airplane? And for most instances, it is going to be true. Flying the airplane is more important. There's sometimes that, yes, we have to run a checklist or a QRC or QRH procedure or a memory item, but more often than not, it's going to be flying the airplane first. And we have, it's called the threat and error application model. And, you know, the first step is to, you know, recognize there is an unanticipated threat. And the first step of that is to fly the airplane, right? The memory item comes second, QRC comes third, and QRH comes down the line. So it's, we have to assess the criticality of certain things that happen so that way we don't jump into a bigger problem. Also, what I've run a lot into is that when there is an abnormal situation that happens with the airplane, new FOs typically jump the gun and try to act on certain, just kind of, they're conditioned to, as soon as they hear something happen, for example, let's say you get a master warning for a laboratory smoke, right? When I ask them, I say, well, what are you going to do if you get a master warning for a laboratory smoke, bathroom smoke, right? So something happened, something's going on in the bathroom. So what are you going to do? And more often than not, I guess, oh, I'm going to don my oxygen mask. I'm going to establish communication and then, you know, run the QRC, right? But I said, well, actually, it's the first thing is to fly the airplane, right? So the airplane's flying just okay. Then we run the memory item. But also, when we get a master caution or something happens that we are not anticipating in flight or on the ground, we have to assess the criticality of the situation. We have to take a deep breath, right? Don't panic. A lot of people panic. They jump into action. They start pressing buttons. They start doing things out of sequence because they're rushing into doing this. You know, this is how they usually botch go-arounds, right? They're so focused on hitting that toga button that they forget to call for the flaps. They forget to call for the gear, right? So slow down, right? In the absence of experience, slow down. So usually I say, well, if you get a laugh smoke, because this has happened to me a couple of times, I say, if you get a laugh smoke, the first thing we do is we want to contact the flight attendants to make sure that it is in fact a fire or there is actually smoke going on in the bathroom. And guess what? Most of the time they're going to tell you it was some guy vaping in the bathroom. That's what you're going to get. So you assess the criticality of the situation by expanding your CRM team, right? Your crew resource management, expanding CRM, getting the flight attendants involved and say, hey, what's going on back there? Oh, no, some guy vaping, you know, he's in first class. We got a name, you know, whatever. So we'll deal with him later. But now we just saved ourselves taking off our headsets, putting on the mask, doing all that stuff up front, right? Now, if the flight attendants say, oh, yeah, there is a fire, right? Okay, then we escalate the issue and we move on to what we need to do and put on our mask and do that. And if the cabin or the flight deck starts filling up with smoke, there's another procedure for that. But always assess the criticality of a situation because not everything, and we hope not, I mean, this that the airplane, like if losing control, like say we lose part of our aileron or our rudder, that's going to be a really time-critical situation, right? That we have to act right now. But most things that happen in an airplane, even an engine failure, is take a deep breath, assess the criticality, fly the airplane, and move forward from that. So that's super important to understand. So when you go to your check ride, remember that we're seeing not only your execution of the flows in the checklist, but we're seeing how you're prioritizing tasks. What's important right now? We also, a big thing that I'm noticing is people are really weak on fuel planning and holding calculations. Use the computer, okay? We know we teach in the classroom how to use the bar H method, you know, to burn alternate reserve fuel for your holding fuel, but use your resources in the plane to determine what you have on board, right? What you're actually burning, how much time, how fast you're flying, etc. Use the resources you have on board, okay? I'm trying to think of anything else, but those are the big ones, right? So we don't want you to be robotic. The way that you can do this is by chair flying, asking a lot of questions, and knowing that a checklist may be the last thing you need, that you need to prioritize flying the airplane, getting us off this runway safely and efficiently before we run any checklists, right? And like I said, in most instances, flying the airplane is going to be priority number one. Aviate, navigate, communicate. Okay, now the last thing I'm going to talk about today is currently there is this post floating around the internet. I mean, it's everywhere now. I've seen it on X. A friend of mine sent me this screenshot of this, I'm assuming a pilot, that made a post somewhere in a forum complaining about a jump seater. It was a United new hire jump seating a Southwest flight between San Francisco and San Diego, I believe. And something happened during their session or during this flight that this jump seater felt compelled to run to the FAA and report this crew. I don't know what the reason was, but this post makes it seem like, I don't know, man, just the way that is worded, it just makes my blood boil a little bit. I don't know. I'm going to read this to you really quick. Let me pull up the picture here or the screenshot. I'm going to leave names out. I'm not going to say any names, but this is the post that came through or that I read that is floating around the internet. It says, a newer hire at United jump seated on Southwest Airlines recently from San Francisco to San Diego, and after the flight was over, decided she would notify the FAA on the inadequacies of the crew whose jump seat they graciously offered. Not going to name names, but for God's sakes, please mentor our newer hires on how to jump seat properly and keep your damn mouth shut. So first of all, right off the bat, I'm going to dissect this a little bit. I'm going to go in sections. But first of all, you telling someone to keep their damn mouth shut, I don't think that's really a positive work environment or encouraging to report or a good safety culture. Let's put it that way. I don't know if this was a safety-related incident. I don't know if there was that's the reason why this female decided to go to the FAA. But you telling everyone, especially younger pilots, to keep your damn mouth shut, shame on you, all right? Just shame on you for doing that. I don't understand why you had the need to say that. That's just ridiculous. At the very least, I'm going to continue on. It says, at the very least, if you see something incorrect or wrong, very politely query the crew. If you feel you must, like, oh yeah, like I'm not going to talk, you know, I'm not going to speak up, and let them explain themselves. If they choose to, if they choose not to, and you are not satisfied, please contact our jump seat committee and let them handle it. Running to the FAA and skipping Rob's committee is, I don't know what Rob's committee is, it's not the way to do this. And I think that common sense would prevail, but here we are. So it sounds like to me, like they're just pissed about the fact that they went, this girl or woman or female, whatever you want to call them, decided to go directly to the FAA instead of going to the proper channels. Now, I agree. I'm all about chain of command, right? I'm about to talking directly to the person first, addressing them with them first, deal with the problem there, Then if that doesn't work, then you go to your supervisor. Then if you don't go there, you know, just go up the ladder, right? And just inform them and keep them informed of what's going to happen. But apparently this this lady, woman, girl, female, decided to go straight to the FAA. Not the way that I've handled it, but it's still. Maybe her concern was serious enough, or maybe she did speak up and they didn't say anything, or they disagree, or they had a disagreement in the flight deck, and she deemed it necessary to go directly to the FAA. We don't know, but they're making assumptions here as far as, you know, not knowing or just being about being new. Okay, let me continue. Personally, I don't say jack while I'm writing, and I and am basically a very polite doormat, right, dude? Enjoying being a doormat. Yeah, okay. Yeah, not talk or anything. Yeah, just sit there. I've got to say, I'm not surprised by this, as some of our newer folks just seem to not get it at times and not really sure how we can prevent this from happening in the future. Hey, guy. How about, what do you mean you're surprised? Like, what about just you yourself mentoring pilots yourself instead of ranting online? Maybe do that. You know, it's like newer folks. Like, I mean, this is just giving like boomer captain vibes right off the bat. Like, this is some guy that's just like sticking to the status quo. Like, oh, you're not doing it how we're supposed to do it. Oh, guess what? We've been doing this before you were even born. I'm like, shut up. This is just pissing me off. He was like, I'm not surprised. Okay. It's like, I'm not really sure how we can prevent this. Prevent it by just mentoring pilots yourself, guy. Just do that. Okay. How about that? All right. So then let me continue. It says, rightly or wrongly, some of the Southwest guys and gals are starting to turn down our pilots as the story winds its way around their seniority list. Please share your thoughts on this with the people you fly with and remind them that jump seating is a privilege and not a right. I totally agree. I agree with that. Many of our pilots depend on the ride from Southwest Airlines, and to be turned down because of someone else's foolishness is unforgivable. So someone reporting a concern to the FAA apparently is foolishness to this guy. unforgivable. Oh my God, it's unforgivable. I don't understand. I mean, I'm just reading this, just pissed me off. Like I said, this is giving like some salty dudes, you know, he's been in the company for 20 plus years and they're used to flying with a flight deck door open. They're used to just, you know, just being cowboys in the flight deck. It's a new environment, guys. It's a new environment nowadays. We have to be adaptable, and you're probably about to retire yourself. You know, who knows? Maybe not. I'm just making assumptions here, but I don't know. I think it's kind of given toxic work vibes here. I don't really get it. You know, we can go and sit here and ask ourselves, was a new hire in the wrong? You know, the consensus is that everyone is jumping on this girl right now. Right? I was calling her a snitch. Everyone is mad at her for not following quote unquote protocol. You know, everyone's just ready to crucify her. I've seen, you know, memes and posts and just about everyone, especially and even people I know. You know, and like I said, I do agree that the flight deck is a privilege, not a right. But to tell people to keep their mouth shut, like, okay, guy, why don't you go yell at a cashier somewhere? I don't know. This is like really, it just rubs me the wrong way, man. You know, like, listen, more often than not, I'm for the underdog. Okay, I go against established norms. I go against the status quo and normal societal expectations. My opinions usually just, you know, they go against the grain. And honestly, I've gotten, you know, bullied. We'll call it bullying. By the more established members of the community, when I stand up for the beliefs of the person standing up on a popular point of view. So, you know, they voice something that goes against the grain and people just automatically just jump on these people, right? We make assumptions of these people without even knowing anything, you know, and I've been left alone to fight some battles. You know, I've had people come up to me after the fact telling me, it's like, oh, how unfair it was, you know, how they treated me and that they were going to back me up and they had a response ready or something, that they were going to say something. But in the end, they didn't have my back. You know, they didn't stand out for me because they were afraid of being caught in the shitstorm I've gotten myself into. And they don't want to be associated with my unpopular opinion or stand up for the senior daddies and mamas, right? They don't want to stand up to them. And I don't blame them. You know, it takes courage to stand up for your beliefs. And a lot of us don't have that kind of courage. I certainly don't most of the time. You know, I've dealt with senior staff, you know, or people that are well established at certain companies that I've worked at. You know, that believe that it's like you just shut up and sit down, that this is how it's been done since, you know, for eons. You know, oh, they do their jobs right, so that's all that matters. Oh, I was in the military before, blah 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 blah. You know, it's becoming a young person's game, this aviation thing. We have to take opportunities to mentor, right? So instead of ranting online, why don't you take this opportunity to mentor the up and coming pilots so we can all get along, so we can know, hey, this is what we're the expectation. This is what we want. You know, be, you know, inclusive with it. You know, I'm not saying about DEI hires and stuff, but just be inclusive. Make it a nice, fun environment. Because after all, the jump seater becomes an additional crew member. You know, but most of the time, we just take a dump on the new pilots, man. We go on top and we completely brutally destroy people, especially on social media, on people that we don't agree with. Like, we just jump on their beliefs, like, oh, you're not doing it. That's not the way I do it. This is how I would do it. You must be insane. But we all have this uncontrollable urge to attack others, to pass judgment on things we know little or nothing about. But we all do it in the name of fitting in with our peers. Oh, everyone's doing it, so I'm going to do it too. Oh, yeah, look at this, you know, dumb guy or girl. I'm trying not to use explicitives. You know, like I mentioned earlier, I've already seen memes, posts, and comments just completely going after this female, right? What a waste of energy. Does that make you a better human being, like to just put people down or to make assumptions of people of what happened, or just boost your ego, or just makes you feel better to just put people down? We didn't even know exactly what happened, and, you know, we weren't there. We don't know what happened. Now, I'm here to play devil's advocate. I just told you before, right? I like to kind of root for the underdog. I like to root for the other person that's getting, you know, taking a dump on. You know, maybe. Now, here. Maybe this female pilot is a horrendous, entitled, spoiled brat and had no business running to Big Daddy FAA. Who knows? But by the sound of this post, this woman shattered the status quo, slapped this crew's fragile ego and false sense of perfection and superiority, and triggered a potential jump seat war between carriers, all because she didn't keep her mouth shut. You know, I just thought of a really good example of fragile masculinity, of how I experienced. I listed for the jump seat on a flight, and I am not going to name the airline because I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings about that, about their airline. But anyways, one time, and this is probably about a year into actually doing airline operations, but I listed for the jump seat, and this airline, we have to, even if you're jumping, if you're commuting, you have to list for the jump seat. And then if they have room in the back, they'll give you a seat. But I remember this particular day, I was flying from Vegas back to Denver, and I listed for the jump seat, and they told me, hey, we got a seat for you. It's wide open, so we'll give you a seat. So I made my way to down the jet bridge into the plane, and I went and took my seat. So that was my mistake to begin with, because since I listed for the jump seat, I had to check in with the crew and tell them like, hey, my name is this. I'm with this company. I have, you know, I listed for the jump seat, but they have a seat in back. This is where I'm going to be sitting, but and whatever. So I completely spaced out. I took my seat and I was like miles away. My head was miles away. And a few minutes after I sat down, the flight attendant comes up and he says, the captain wants to see you. And immediately I knew that I had forgotten to check in with the captain. I was like, oh man, I'm so sorry. So I got up, left my stuff in the bag. Like I just went up by myself. I left my bag there and I went up to talk to the captain. And this captain, this poor excuse of a human being, decided to berate me in front of the entire crew in first class, or not first class because I don't have first class, but these passengers up front, and started to telling me, it's like, do you know who I am? Do you know that I need to know everyone that's on board? Like, why didn't you check in with me? Like, I'm like, at first I was getting ready to scream, but I really wanted to get to Denver. So I didn't want to lose my seat. So I apologize. I'm sorry. You know, I know I had to check in with you. I just totally forgot, but I understand I have to check in. That wasn't enough. He had to continue berating me in front of the crew. Instead of taking me outside of the jet bridge, instead of talking me privately, he decided to do this publicly. Super unprofessional. And I was just like, this is ridiculous. Like, is this for real right now? Is this real life? And I was so pissed off. But this guy was just like, I need to see your documents. I'm like, first of all, I'm not going to be in the jump seat. So you don't need to see nothing. In my head, I said it in my head. But I got my documents. I went back, did the walk of shame back the aisle, got my documents, and he checked it. I was like, next time, make sure you check in with the captain. I was like, I already apologized to you, bro. Like, I'm sorry I slapped your pee-pee. You know, I'm like, I am, you know, I'm sorry that my presence as a regional pilot is threatening your existence. It's like, but it's ridiculous. I mean, you have to understand that these individuals exist, and you have to stay professional. I just kept my mouth shut. I apologized, and I didn't think of actually talking to a committee about that. But that's what happened. And I don't know, this whole post about it just kind of reminds me of that. I don't know. I just got a little triggered. So let's hold off on that judgment, see what happens. And I don't know. I don't know how this is going to play out, but. Listen, guys, let me talk about jump seat etiquette. And I think I've done this before with some of you, but I want to kind of give you my beliefs on this. It's a privilege, it's not a right. Be respectful, right? Come up and ask for the jump seat. List for the jump seat, ask for permission, excuse me, please, thank you. You know, I've had the privilege of riding with a lot of crews that have been really nice, and they brief me and we joke about it. You know, they say, hey, if anything goes wrong, it's your fault. we laugh about it, right? But we brief, you know, and I become an additional crew member. I plug in with my headset. I make sure that I'm there present, because if something happens, guess what's going to happen? If you get into an incident and the NTSB or the FAA investigates, guess who they're going to ask questions to? You, because you were there. You're an additional crew member. You know, I've caught a few crews kind of slipping a little bit, but I don't make it a big habit. Like I remember one time, I'll give you an example, climbing out, and the captain started transferring some fuel, and they forgot about transferring fuel. And I noticed that, and I kind of just asked him, I say, hey, what's the imbalance limitation on this airplane? I just kind of asked a little bit. I was just curious, because in my plane, it's 794 pounds. And he's like, oh, and then he looked at the fuel, and then he's like, oh, shoot, I forgot. And they fixed it. But I didn't make a big deal about it. I don't think they've ever been unsafe. I don't think, but even if it was, I'd probably say something, because if you don't, but if it's like more of like a procedural thing, probably I would have gone to their jump seat committee, maybe just kind of voice my concerns. I try. If you're not getting, okay, my goal, my thing is this, if you are not going to talk directly to the crew and address the concerns you have with them, it is not worth talking to anybody else, unless there's like fear of retribution. Then at that point, that yes, you can talk to, you know, the jump seat committee, but stay professional. Make sure that you are just doing everything and address the problem at the lowest level possible. and move on. But just be respectful, guys. I've had so much fun jump seating, and honestly, I avoid it now because I hate sitting there for hours in that little tiny seat. I'd rather have a seat in the back. Speaking of which, some people have asked me what the difference between jump seating and non-revving is. So when you non-rev, usually you have to pay a fee. So like if you use Zed Fares or My ID 90, you have to pay a fare like between $30 and $40 to non-rev, right? And now for a non-rev ticket, you don't have the responsibilities of a jump seater. You can have drinks, you can, you know, still abide by the dress code, but you don't have to, you know, have to shave, etc. You can go on as an actual passenger. But if you are listing for the jump seat, there is no fee associated with that. And you want to stick with the whole commuting policy, meaning if you are commuting to and from work, use that option because you're not paying anything. If you're going to be going on a vacation, just pay off the free, just pay the damn fee, all right? Pay the $30, $40. Now, if it gets super tight, where fine, there are certain instances where you can jump seat because, you know, let's say that there was another one, just pay the fee. Let's say there was another passenger that was not going to make it on if you took that seat. Okay, fine, you can take the jump seat. But for most instances, if you are commuting to and from work, then yes, definitely use the jump seating option because that means you're also fit for duty. You can't drink, you have to be well rested, and you have to be part of that crew So be ready for that. You know, be dressed in, business casual, shaven, or whatever the company has you or the expectations based on the company you're jump seating. All right? So that's the difference. Anyways, guys, man, as you can tell, this episode has gone, super long because I'm so fired up about this content. Tell me what you think. If you agree with what I'm saying, if you disagree, let me know. But I feel like we're jumping on this woman for absolutely no reason right now. And we're just taking sides on this guy that just is like, oh, it's like, it's a snitch. Oh, you know, snitches get stitches, right? So anyways, I'm devil's advocate. Who knows? Maybe she is a really horrible human being and, you know, we all need to crucify her. But I don't know, man. We don't know the story. But just the sound of this damn pose just fires me up, man, because I've dealt with people like that. And it's just like, ugh, it irks me. And it's like those are the same people that go yell at their cashiers or, you know, yell at service workers because they didn't get their ice in their cup. I don't know. Anyways, maybe I'm just being overdramatic. Anyways, thank you so much, guys. As I always say, keep growing, keep learning, because good enough to earn a living may not be good enough to survive.
Hey, fellow aviation enthusiasts, before I let you go, I'd like to ask you for a huge favor. If you could please go to the platform where you're listening this podcast in and leave a review, some feedback, and some comments. I really do appreciate that. I want to make the Tailwinds and Sunshine podcast your podcast. I also want to give a huge thanks to my friends and coworkers that have shared the podcast with their friends and family. That means the world to me. I really appreciate your support and your subscriptions. If you want to reach out to me, you can email me at Manny, the CFI at gmail.com, or you can message me directly on Instagram at climbvx. That's CLIMB as in Bravo, B as in Victor, X-ray. You can reach me there with your suggestions or any feedback. Once again, thank you from the bottom of my heart. I appreciate the support. And until next episode, I wish you tailwinds and sunshine. See ya.
The statements made on the show are my own opinion and do not necessarily reflect those of my employer.